Welcome to Your Money Today, a unique look at financial, geopolitical, and other news relevant to you. For 45 years now, your host, Chris Temple, has provided his one-of-a-kind insights and advice on the markets and on our world. Whatever the subject, he calls them like he sees them. Roll up your sleeves with Chris as we get into today's program.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm recording this the second full weekend of September. Time is sure flying. We're halfway through this month pretty much already, and a lot of things coming up. Those of you who have been paying attention know that the 1st through the 3rd of October, I'll be privileged to be at Better in Our Backyards Mining and Energy Expo in the Twin Cities. You don't want to miss it if you can possibly get there. If you're an investor wondering about the opportunities in extractive industries and in infrastructure and all those types of things, particularly with the policy tailwinds we have these days, you want to be there. If you're looking for employment in one of those industries, if you're just a concerned citizen and want to know what's going on to try and bring back to America all of the things that we outsourced and offshored and everything over the years, this is a conference you want to be at. I'll have a link to it in the show notes. About a week or so after that, it's still a little bit up in the air, but for those of you in and around the Chicagoland area, for the first time in a while, I'm going to organize a little get-together for whoever wants to show up. So be on the lookout for that. And the alternative, if you haven't heard from me first, shoot me an email if you would like to be able to be on the list for that little get-together. It's a moving target, as is my schedule as I start the trek back to Florida, but we'll see what happens. Now, for today's purposes, we have what Yogi Berra would call deja vu all over again. The Federal Reserve is going to be getting together this coming Tuesday and Wednesday at 2 o'clock Eastern Time. On Wednesday, we're going to hear that the Fed has reduced short-term interest rates for the first time since last December. And I want to give a few insights and thoughts in this preview. There's going to be a lot more to come in the coming several days. We'll, of course, have a podcast after the fact to see what happened and talk about the implications. But I want to talk about how the setup is this time around, because in very many ways we're looking at a pattern of what we had in September of 2024. Back then, you'll remember that the markets were pining for an interest rate cut. President Biden at the time wasn't saying very much about it, unlike President Trump, of course, these days, who won't keep his mouth shut about the Federal Reserve, it seems, for the most part. But last year, when the Fed did start what they at the time called a mid-cycle course correction, they started it with a 50 basis point rate cut, which surprised some people in September. Afterwards, a lot of people questioned that. They followed up that particular cut with 225 basis point cuts, so for a total of 100 basis points, 1% is the amount by which they reduced the federal funds rate when all was said and done. But what surprised some people, not us, of course, if you remember, was that long-term interest rates went the opposite direction quite aggressively. From bottom to top, they rose by over 100 basis points. So you had a huge steepening of the yield curve. Now, that's something that helps lenders to a certain extent. When you've got a bigger spread on the surface, they make more money by borrowing short and then lending long, that type of thing. But there are reasons why the long end of the bond market simply did not cooperate with what the intention had been. And that was, of course, to lower borrowing costs, because unless you're a big hedge fund, unless you're the Treasury or some other player, if you're looking for a mortgage, if you're looking for a small business loan, if you've got already high credit card debts, all of those costs ended up higher still, despite the Fed cutting rates. Why was that? Well, simply put, number one, inflation, which the Fed itself created. In the wake of COVID, they issued the equivalent of 30% of all of the U.S. dollars ever issued in the history of the United States of America. That's what unleashed consumer and producer price increases of the highest nature in some 40 years. And that's still with us, at least to some extent. We're certainly off the highs. But by most measures, if you go back to early this year, when inflation numbers were fluttering down, now they're going back in the opposite direction. And you're still between 3 and 4% annualized on most consumer inflation measures. I'll have a link to one particular take on this in the video notes. So that was the situation last year, and it's the situation this year. So problem number one for Jerome Powell and company when they cut rates last year was that the bond market simply sensed that they were blinking in the face of inflation. They're more worried about keeping Wall Street goosed and cryptocurrencies goosed and the whole system from collapsing. Now, besides the Fed lowering short-term interest rates despite inflation staying sticky, as everybody usually terms it, the other big issue we had late last year was the federal debt. Whether it was the outgoing President Biden, the potential incoming President Kamala Harris, or the eventual re-incoming, if that's a word, President Donald Trump, the bond market has no reason legitimately to believe that anybody is serious about reining in the size and scope and spending of the federal government. And regrettably, President Trump and Republicans in Congress have demonstrated that very, very much this year as well. So, you know, each year, those of you who follow me for a while know I kind of have a theme at the beginning of the year going into 2024. I said if you wanted to understand the markets, you needed to understand three words: supply, supply, and supply. In this context, it's simply that the supply of debt that the Treasury needs to issue and or roll over is so large that interest rates have to stay elevated if you want to be able to attract money and increasing amounts of the share of money that's available in private markets. You know, it's simple supply and demand, folks. And kind of a corollary of that coming into this year, and more so when it came to President Trump and his agenda, I said that the theme for 2025 is let's do the math. The math is not good. The math is very discouraging, as a matter of fact, on a lot of different fronts. And again, I'll be addressing this further in the days ahead when it comes to the broad markets being way out over their skis. And once again, coming into this Fed meeting this week, the bond market having rallied, as it usually does in knee-jerk fashion, you know, if you think the Fed's going to lower rates, you buy treasuries all across the yield curve. But then, just like last September, when people did that, I mean, the 10-year treasury was down to something like 3.6% or 3.7%. The bond market had rallied, long-term yields had dropped in anticipation of last September's rate cut. By the end of the year, early 25, we were up to near 5% for the 10-year treasury when everybody woke up and said, holy cow, the Fed is going to tolerate higher inflation. There's all of this debt that's got to be financed. And the bond market vigilante said, okay, well, pay us. We'll still loan Uncle Sam, or these days Uncle Donald, money, but it's not going to be at low interest rates. Thirdly, besides the sticky inflation, besides the sheer size of the financing nut that the Treasury has that's going to keep upward pressure, certainly on the long end of the Treasury market, we have Congress and potentially the administration, but certainly the blame lies mostly with Congress, yet again ready to shove another continuing resolution down everybody's throat. I'm one of those who has never liked nor trusted House Speaker Mike Johnson. More than once, he has demonstrated that he has zero interest in legitimately reducing the size of government. You'll remember late last year when President Biden was a lame duck that he attempted to force through a continuing resolution which was almost unanimously Democrat spending priorities until a few members of his own party called him on it. You know, you remember the fights, perhaps. There were a couple instances where there were holdouts. He wasn't going to be able to get the votes, nor should he have gotten the votes. Well, what has happened since? Unfortunately, and those of you who know me know that I generally support President Trump's stated policy goals and agenda when it comes to a great many things, but he hasn't done himself any favors on this front because he has not held Johnson's feet to the fire, nor the Senate. We had the one big, beautiful MAGA baseball hot dogs, apple pie, and the flag bill that's going to add an average of $2 trillion to the debt every year for the next decade. That passed. And following that, it's laughable, it's insulting when everybody came out afterwards and said, oh, look at how tough we are. We cut $9 billion and we took it back from previously appropriated money. That's a pimple on a flea compared to what they added to the debt going forward. And here again, this is something the bond market sees. The bond market vigilantes are not going to let the Treasury and or the Fed get away with this. So upcoming, we have, and this was predictable, I predicted it, others did, and it's coming true. Speaker Johnson has not put together all of the individual budget bills for the different departments of government ahead of the fiscal year, which starts October 1st for the fiscal 2026 year. Some of it they may be able to get through, but for the overwhelming majority of things, they're going to once again come back to the table and say, well, we need a continuing resolution. The Democrats, unlike Chuck Schumer, who earlier this year played ball on this and got a lot of heat from his own party for it, doesn't act like he wants to do it again. It's going to be tough. And in the end, the likely result, once more, is going to be that we continue the obscene post-COVID enhanced spending measures, the likes of which, I'll tell you who's been really eloquent on this, is Senator Ron Johnson from here in Wisconsin, where I'm still sitting for the next few weeks. He has pointed out many times that you can't begin to justify, you know, a 35 or 40% almost overnight increase in a federal budget and not come up with any game plan to take some of that back. COVID is over with. The emergency is over with, supposedly, until they come up with another one. But nobody wants to do this. And here again, yes, the U.S. might be the cleanest shirt in a dirty laundry pile. Yes, the U.S. might have less problems in relative terms than other countries, which, all else being equal, does give some support to the Treasury market and to the dollar. But when everybody from Jerome Powell to President Trump is telling you either outright, as President Trump has done, or implicitly, as the Fed is doing, that they're going to tolerate higher inflation, they're at the inflate or die stage when it comes to the Fed especially, and that the way in which we're going to manage the debt going forward is to cheapen the dollar, let inflation run. That is not the stuff that gives you lower borrowing costs. The markets want to be compensated for that. And so when all is said and done, it's going to be interesting when the Fed starts to lower rates again this coming week to see if we get a repeat of what we did last year, where the bond market vigilantes rebel big time, or whether there are reasons why it may be less bad. And we're going to go down real quick the list of the pros and cons on that right now ahead of the meeting. First off, unlike last year, I do not see the Fed cutting rates by 50 basis points this week coming up. They will probably give us a 25 basis point rate cut. There's a lot of chatter in the market why it needs to be 50. The economy is deteriorating faster than a lot of people want to admit. And I think there is some truth to that, as I've been discussing for a while now, recently, of course, with the last interview I did with Mike Fox of the Prospector News. And of course, he and I, after the Fed, will be doing a podcast and recapping what actually does come out of the Eccles building this week. But I think the Fed is going to try, notwithstanding the fact that they are, without coming right out and saying it, abandoning their 2% inflation target, they still want to at least maintain some veneer that they're going to be vigilant on inflation, even as they're forced to choose between that and supporting what is, by every measure, a deteriorating labor market. And they've told us a few months ago, Jerome Powell did, at least back as far back as June, if not prior, at the June FOMC meeting, that, you know, if he had a gun to his head and had to choose between supporting the labor market or allowing inflation to run hotter, he's going to let inflation run hotter. So this isn't any major surprise to the markets, I think, at least in that sense. And again, the political pressure is there from a lot of different sources, and the market pressure, I think, is there as well for the Fed to acknowledge a weaker economy and at least do something. What'll really be interesting is to see what they come out with as far as the language in the meeting, what Powell says in his press conference Wednesday afternoon, etc. You know, you hear these terms being thrown around of a dovish rate cut, a hawkish rate cut. It'll probably be more the latter. And again, just so the Fed can keep face a little bit and act like it's still at least got one eye on the sticky inflation. So depending on how all this comes out, we could see the market sell off if the Fed signals they're not going to have an aggressive series of rate cuts and they keep their cards close to their vest. And especially if the so-called dot plot doesn't change. I mean, the last what we heard officially was the consensus at the Fed that there would be only 2 25 basis point rate cuts this year. In fact, that was a very close call last time around. It was close to one. And I think due to that and to the fact that the Fed, again, needs to maintain some semblance that it's not going to completely abandon the fight against inflation, even if it switches gears a little bit, I don't think we're going to get quite the signal from the Fed this week that they're going to be aggressive in lowering interest rates. And all else being equal, that should keep the bond market from rebelling immediately. That might come, of course, if we have a government shutdown and a protracted fight over the budget/continuing resolution. You know, we'll find out. There are a couple other things, too, that might keep the long end of the bond market from selling off abruptly or by any great magnitude, at least for the time being. The first, frankly, is that the economy is getting weaker. I know that the president always likes to tell us about how wonderful things are doing. Of course, if you measure it by bubbles in the stock market and in cryptocurrencies, things are great, and maybe it's the best economy in the history of the solar system, etc. But for Joe Sixpack and Sally Soccer Mom, for Uncle Fred and Aunt Martha trying to get by on their retirement, if they don't have a great deal of savings, it's not easy. You know, the consumer confidence numbers that came out just this last week were at a multi-month low and showing that, contrary to the official rhetoric, the average American is very concerned with not only lingering inflation, but that prices are going to continue to rise even more. You've got 50 to 70%, depending on how you want to measure it, of the American people who believe that we're already in a recession. They feel inflation. They see that things are tighter and that making ends meet has become more difficult. I've told these anecdotes a few times over the summer. I'll repeat it again. And I said this with Mike Fox the last time I was on his Prospector News podcast. You know, I try as best as I can to throw away preconceived notions and look at what's in front of me, look at things with my own eyes, listen with my own ears, and then make judgments based on reality, not on how I think things should be. And look, this year, in my trek from Florida up to the upper Midwest, which I do every year, with the majority of my children and grandchildren live here in Wisconsin and Minnesota, as some of you know, I very much noticed the reality that there is not as much summer travel this year. A lot of the usual suspect places I see that usually do a bang-up business around here, and this part of northern Wisconsin I'm in right now is very much a seasonal time of year. There aren't people traveling as much. They aren't out as much. The restaurants aren't quite as full. You don't see the activity that you did. Even before I left home back in late July, in St. Augustine, which is a very much a tourist mecca, and for much more of the year than is the case up here in northern Wisconsin, I was starting to see that people are pulling in their horns a little bit. They don't go out to eat quite as much. They're not traveling as much. And there's a lot of other measures. You know, those of you who follow the news out of a lot of the big box retailers, out of the transportation companies, the UPSs, the FedExes, and so forth, the picture is very much of an overall economy that took on so much debt and got so far ahead of itself. Again, somewhat thanks to the Fed and printing all these extra trillions of dollars, that now we're at a place right now, folks, where it really doesn't matter if the Fed manages to bring even long-term borrowing costs down. The average business, the average consumer is so loaded with debt right now and having such trouble trying to navigate this new stagflation world that they're just not going to go out and do a whole heck of a lot. It's not a magic wand that the Fed can wave, and this has been demonstrated many times by lowering interest rates. That's not the problem, that credit, new credit, is too expensive. The bigger problem is that people have already loaded themselves with a lot of credit. They've lost their jobs, they've downsized or whatever. And, you know, again, this 50 to 70% swath of the U.S. population that is not flush, does not have huge stock and crypto portfolios, life is not that great right now, and they don't expect that it's going to get much better. So that argues for the long end of the Treasury market to behave itself somewhat. If this time, unlike the way things looked maybe the end of last year, to a lesser extent, now to a greater extent, we're seeing signs grow that, you know, we're going to have some issues with the economic growth going forward. Another part of this that could cause treasuries to actually rally, if there were a major dislocation in the markets of some kind, is that we've got multi-year, if not record, levels of delinquencies on credit cards, on the so-called, the high-end car loans, subprime car loans, mortgage debt for commercial mortgages. The delinquency rates for that and the stress there is the highest it's ever been. And so the Fed, and this is, you know, truth be told, this is one of the reasons why they're going to give in and start to lower short-term interest rates somewhat, is to try and take pressure off of overall bloated and out over their skis credit markets, where similarly to late 2019, when there were starting to be some cracks in repo markets, as you recall, early this year, we've started to see the Japanese bond market itself start to come undone. European interest rates in some countries have spiked higher, even as short-term rates have been lowered by the ECB. So you've got these mountains of debt out there that require high interest rates, but for a while we may see lower interest rates if these central banks can't keep everything glued together. So that remains to be seen. But aside from the reality of a weakening economy maybe keeping long-term yields from rebounding too much, we also have that dynamic I just alluded to of other countries, where you've had similar things in Europe, especially where the ECB has lowered short-term rates several times. President Trump has reminded us all and reminded Jerome Powell of that they've lowered rates. But the party forgot to remind everybody of was that even as the ECB lowered short-term rates, long-term market rates went up over there as well, just like they did here last year. So, you know, you got to be careful what you wish for. But all that said, it is still going to be a net plus for treasuries, even though I don't think that we're going to rally any more than we already have, unless the economy really falls off a cliff or the markets have an accident. It is still a net benefit for treasury yields here in the U.S. that they're going to stay behaved, because there's just bigger problems elsewhere. You've had the government collapse once again in France. Europe is an overall block, is still in the slow motion suicide. It's crazy. That's a whole different subject, especially where it concerns this proxy war with Russia and so forth. But Europe is really ever more becoming an also-ran. Like the old vaunted British Empire once in a while that used to be king of the hill way back into the late 19th and early 20th century. Europe never even got to that place, even with the promise of the euro coming about back a quarter of a century ago. And things continue to deteriorate there. Of course, China as well has continued their valiant attempts to fight off deflation and a more substantial credit bust over there. So, you know, notwithstanding the fact that longer term we are likely to see, without some major intervention, and of course that may come, as I've suggested, in the form of yield curve control or something like that, but until we get to that point, we still are going to have a bias toward the upside on long-term treasury yields, even if we don't exceed that 5% number on a 10% yield that we had late last year and into early this year. Indeed, some people noted at the end of this past week that after just briefly trying to get down below 4% even, the 10-year treasury yield popped back up to, I think it ended the week at 4.06. Neither of those numbers matched the low from back in the spring when we were briefly, and I mean very briefly, down to like 390 on a 10-year treasury. But again, folks, this is a function of, number one, and we'll get some insight on this, of course, this coming week, the Fed putting on the shelf its fight against inflation to a great extent, trying to rescue the labor market, supposedly, but also, as I just said, the financial markets keep things liquid, keep all of these increasing numbers of balls in the air. So you've got that issue. And the other thing, again, and this is even beyond the health or lack thereof of the economy, the inflation numbers, is the sheer volume of debt. So also in the coming not that many weeks, impacting this whole picture besides what the Fed does this week, is going to be what goes on with the federal budget. Now, the current fiscal year closes in just over 2 weeks, on September 30th. Most signs are that there may end up being, especially if the Trump administration can, you know, doesn't yet have to refund, if it comes out this way, any of the tariff money they've already collected, if the upcoming Supreme Court case goes contrary to the administration. We may see a modest improvement over last year's deficit, but the big picture is going to continue to be that we're going to have roughly, you know, you round it off, $2 trillion annual deficits as far ahead as you want to look. That was what was legislated with that big, beautiful bill, so-called. I won't get into all the other monikers of it early this year. It's what is going to be mandated by the ever-increasing defense spending and a whole lot of other things. And unless we see some major change to that, that's going to keep an upward bias on long-term interest rates. Now, the Treasury, for the moment, is getting by with that by doing the overwhelming majority of borrowing and refinancing, basically, as one pundit put it recently, in a form of kind of payday loans, you know, 30-day, 60-day, 90-day kind of thing, so that they can at least take some advantage of the lower yields there. And of course, that's a big reason why President Trump, and he said this, wants the Fed to lower short-term interest rates, is that if that's how the Treasury is going to finance and refinance debt, well, then the Fed at least does have some control over short-term rates, and that means all else being equal, borrowing costs will be less, and they'll let all the rest of us wrestle with the unaffordability of chronically higher long-term borrowing costs. Wrapping this all up, I think that it's more likely than not that we're going to see a more pronounced correction in the markets than we've had in a while, maybe rivaling what we saw earlier this year when there were concerns of chronically higher interest rates, inflation staying sticky, and the rest, that at least back then, the markets chose to acknowledge somewhat. They've not acknowledged that for quite a while now, but I think that reality is going to set in again. And I think part of that is, as the reality unfolds, that we are going to face a more marked and broad slowdown in the economy. contrary to what a lot of people believe. You know, following this, I'm going to finally release a compilation of a lot of different thoughts here as we have ended summer, starting to transition into the fall. I've been adding a few more pieces to that. And look, to be fair, President Trump, if he were able to get away with, and I don't mean that in a bad sense, a lot of the stuff he's proposed would, all else being equal, greatly expand the economy and the tax base, etc. But he can't do all of these things as much as he thinks he can unilaterally. So we're dealing with a situation of gravity simply getting ready to reassert itself, as along with reality. So I think that for most risk assets, you've got to be careful in the near term. I don't think the Fed is necessarily going to push us off a cliff if we get that so-called hawkish cut this week. But I think that that and some other things are going to underscore the fact that we've gotten way too spoiled. We think that things are just too easy, and they're not going to stay that way. They're not going to be that way. And I warned about this before President Trump got inaugurated for the second time, that the math was not in his favor. Circumstances were not in his favor. And don't forget, and I'll be repeating this, the big picture view, even beyond this week's Fed meeting and the fact, I think, that markets are grossly overpriced for the real world that we're actually in and are going to have to again make an attempt to reprice themselves, is that the bigger picture is that we have prolonged the upward move of this last big monetary and credit cycle that really got some rocket fuel with all the trillions that were added to the mix in the immediate wake of COVID and even starting before that, as you recall. And so now, inevitably, you've got to have a downward cycle. And the question is not whether we have something like that, but whether central banks and policymakers are this time around, unlike what we saw in 2000, in 2008, to a lesser extent along the way, a couple of different times with minor corrections and headaches, the big self-imposed one in 2020, are we going to be able to manage all of this just with easy money, tolerating higher inflation, and continuing to throw so much new money and credit at everything that we just plod along? Or is there going to be some more dramatic deflation part of the credit cycle before they blow everything up and go the other direction again? And none of us has the answer to that question. I certainly hope that, you know, at least it's the former, that we continue to plod along and don't have a major bust. Of course, if we have a major bust, even a lot of recently hot items, even in fundamentally sound sectors of the market, you know, commodities, energy, things like that, that should be doing better, they'll get, you know, thrown out along with everything else. So I'll be having a lot more to say about these different sectors in the few weeks immediately ahead. For present purposes, about the only thing you can continue, I think, to hang your hat on is gold. As I've shared along with others in recent days, gold at long last, with this big move, it's continued well into 2025, has finally taken out its inflation-adjusted high from back in 1980. You go all the way back there to that first big spike that gold had, where it briefly was over $800 an ounce. In inflation adjusted terms, we just exceeded that in recent days. And of course, that's because of these themes like central banks now powerless to do anything to bring inflation down any more than they already have, and in fact starting to go the other way and tolerate higher inflation. They have no choice but to do that. It's a simple question of mathematics, as I've said many times, and as a monetary alternative. And look, another part of this thing is, and I'll be talking about this in this compilation of subjects that I have coming out, probably going to be later this coming week after the Fed at this point, but be on the lookout for that, because one of the other things that initially Trump 2.0 suggested it was going to reverse has now gone in the wrong direction, and that is with a lot of his renewed threats for new sanctions against Russia, with his imposition of so-called secondary tariffs against countries like India. President Trump is now doing number one, what he seemed to want to undo in the first months of this second term, and of course what President Biden did, and he's driving the rest of the world together. The BRICS story, as I've often pointed out, has been overstated in many respects, certainly in the respect that these people are going to be able to cobble together a global payments and reserve system to rival the U.S. and the U.S. dollar. And we're still not anywhere close to that. But all of these foreign policy fights and tariff fights and everything else is, necessity is the mother of invention. And all of a sudden, like we just saw in this Asian meeting between Xi Jinping of China and President Putin of Russia and President Modi of India and some of the others, is that the rest of the world sees a necessity more urgently now. If Donald Trump and the U.S. are not going to be their friend and are going to be antagonistic, and frankly, and I think this is a good part of it, if President Trump is showing renewed signs, this is the good part of things, of looking to shore up our own backyard more so. Look, this is another reason why gold has done well and why gold is going to continue to be the major global monetary alternative now, even if you've seen recently, to the exclusion of treasuries as the main go-to source. They aren't the main go-to source anymore. It's gold is the main go-to source. Regrettably, aside from that, everything, even great stories like the uranium and nuclear sector, even the more legitimately valued AI and similar technology stories, let alone base metals and all these things that we need going forward into the future as the U.S. seeks to bring back these industries here. Canada is in the same boat, needs to do the same thing. A lot of those things, unfortunately, are going to be hostage to whether the Fed is successful in achieving this so-called soft landing together with policy decisions from Washington or not. So stay tuned. We'll have a lot to say about all of these other different sectors too in the weeks immediately ahead. Thanks for tuning in. And as I said earlier, look for a lot of different things in the days ahead, most notably for these purposes, my discussion with Mike Fox, as always, after the Fed meeting Wednesday afternoon.
We're glad you joined us today. As always, write to chris@nationalinvestor.com with your comments and questions. And be sure to visit yourmoneytoday.org if you haven't already. Sign up for our free alerts, notifications of new shows, and more. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.